Call the answer line where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss. And you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
We present Media Wars, radio propaganda past and present. A series of six programs produced and presented by Jonathan Marks. Episode 5, The Method of Attack.
In the 1980s, the power of radio propaganda tends to be underrated in comparison with, say, 30 or 40 years ago, especially in the developed part of the world where there's been a media explosion. Since the advent of the transistor radio and, of course, the television, the abundance of radio stations and the views which they express helps the individual to spot the person pushing one-sided propaganda. As one tunes round the medium and shortwave bands, three types of propaganda emerge. The first could be termed unintentional propaganda. Domestic stations in both the developed and developing parts of the world tend to concentrate on national affairs, and events overseas, even though they may be of dramatic proportions, tend to get a second place. In the areas where local radio dominates, for example in the United States, small stations tend to emphasize events in the locality as a matter of course. But if competitors in the same area do the same thing, then the listener is left with a media system biased towards the province or the nation. And there's an indication, too, that this type of regional bias is spreading to Europe. As local stations spread, for example, in the United Kingdom, so more stations on the dial are talking about local events, without relating them to life in neighbouring countries. But as long as there's a national network providing international news, the audience is supplied with as much information as it wants. The local bias only becomes a problem when the national network comes under severe financial strain, or in some cases is abolished altogether. The type of radios on sale to the population may also assist in the bias towards local information. VHF FM radio offers much higher fidelity than medium or shortwave, and there's now a trend within Europe at least to push local radio and the popular music networks onto FM. Manufacturers respond by producing cheaper FM radios, which, because of the nature of VHF propagation, means that these sets will only pick up transmitters within the radius of about 50 miles under normal conditions. In some countries of the world, this is put to good use by ensuring that the population is supplied with cheap FM radios and can't listen to opposing viewpoints from over the border. So perhaps it's interesting to note at this point that as well as the trend towards pushing local radio stations, sales of shortwave receivers in countries where local radio is becoming popular appears to be on the increase. A second type of propaganda can only be termed propaganda depending on your personal opinion. It's the information station, which hopes to build up a loyal following through many years of balanced reporting, so becoming a reliable news or entertainment source which people will trust. But because the journalists working at the station will tend to relate world events to their own experiences and to events going on in their immediate surroundings, some would argue that this is in itself introducing national bias and a type of information propaganda which is highly dangerous. But the question is, where does one draw the line? Every time an individual opens his or her mouth, it's to express an opinion, and the type of person who confronts his listeners with every viewpoint and argument about a chosen topic usually becomes long-winded and boring. Others, too, would argue that advertising is the worst form of propaganda, with a person or company pushing a very limited and perhaps distorted amount of facts in extremely short time, hoping that you will be persuaded to buy a certain product. Yet this type of information manipulation is widespread in just about every country in the world. It was only when the technique of subliminal advertising was invented that authorities in North America and Western Europe put the brakes on. This is a visual technique where one or two frames in a film may be cut out and two or three pictures of a particular product inserted instead. This was first tried in cinemas, where a picture of an ice cream and the manufacturer's name were inserted into the main feature film. Because the picture is only seen for a fraction of a second on the screen, the eye is not aware that the film is being interrupted for a commercial, but the message flashed up finds its way instead into the subconscious. In other words, one is influenced without being aware of it. Fairly harmless examples show that the system can work, and as a result, the technique is being widely banned. But then again, without rigorous censorship, it's impossible to know whether certain organisations are in fact ignoring that ban. To the Dutch, the word propaganda usually implies nasty overturns, especially in the wake of the propaganda used in Holland against the Dutch between 1940 and 1945. From the very outset of broadcasting here in the Netherlands, programmes have been made by a variety of different broadcasting companies, which share airtime on the transmitters. Each of the broadcasting companies represents different viewpoints, and in general, the more listeners a broadcasting company can prove it has, the more airtime it can demand. But then, what about the external service?
Di sini siaran Indonesia Radio Nederland dipancarkan dari Hilversum di riak gelombang 16,88.
This is Radio Nederland in Hilversum, Holland.
Well, that's how Radio Netherlands, the Dutch international service, sounded back in the late 1940s. But with the problems in the Dutch East Indies at the time, and the fact that many of the founding members of Radio Nederland Wereldomroep came from a Dutch government in exile station, Radio Oranje, which broadcast to Holland during the Second World War, wasn't the Dutch external service set up to counteract propaganda? Kees Middelhoff has worked with Radio Netherlands' Dutch section since its inception.
No, not as propaganda, I think, but we had the intention to let know to the world what was the Dutch philosophy about decolonization. And we thought it was good to do it, especially in English, to let the world, the English-speaking world, know that. But also in the Arab language, because Indonesia is one of the greatest Muslim countries, and the other Muslim countries were solidaire with Indonesia. And so we thought, well, we will let know to also the Muslim world what is the philosophy, our positive philosophy about decolonization. But as you know also from England, the philosophy of the European way of decolonization is another than was in the colonies itself, the people in the colonies itself.
Was it a government station?
No, certainly not. Government station is impossible in the Netherlands. I think that is against our feeling. We looked also to the claims of the Indonesian people, but I think in that time of after World War II in the world, especially in the United States, the voice of the people in the colonies was stronger than the people than the governments in Europe. But to demonstrate our independence, from time to time we said things of which The Hague was furious. But then we said no, we do it ourselves. We had transmissions in French only half an hour a day, especially for the people behind the Iron Curtain. If you will speak about propaganda, I think we had more or less the idea to make propaganda a little bit with the Dutch liberty, with the Dutch freedom, with the European freedom, and so on.
Why choose French?
French. It was in French, and not in... No, it was impossible for us to give an imitation of, let us say, BBC with Polish, Czechoslovakian, Hungarian, and so on. That was impossible for us to do it. So we did it in a language for the intellectual people behind the Iron Curtain. And in that time, French was especially the language of the intellectual people, also behind the just behind the Iron Curtain.
But that didn't last long.
Well, we have done it, let us say, for 2-3 years, because on a certain moment we have seen ourselves that we were victim of the Cold War mentality, and we would not participate in that.
Case Middelhoff. And the final type of the so-called propaganda station has the aggressive tone of voice. In episode 4 of Media Wars, we looked at some of the clandestine stations which are operating or have operated in Europe, Central America and Asia. But we deliberately ignored one very important continent in which the aggressive type of propaganda is probably most prevalent today. For clandestine radio broadcasts in Africa generally cannot be stamped as clandestine in the true sense of the word. Those of the Polisario Front, the African National Congress, SWAPO or UNITA are broadcast either as part of an official schedule or as a separate operation with some form of official sanction by the host country concerned. As in all cases, though, there are exceptions. A mobile station in Eritrea, Ethiopia's Red Sea province, attempting to break away from Addis Ababa rule. And also in Chad, the different political factions each have their own support stations. In the Republic of South Africa, there's only ever been one true clandestine station, Freedom Radio, active in the 50s and 60s. The final period of activity was in 1960 to 61, at the time of South Africa's departure from the Commonwealth of Nations. The province of Natal is largely English-speaking, and amidst the uncertainty at the time, amongst certain sections of the community of that province, Freedom Radio, the voice of Natal, took to the airwaves, supporting secession, favouring retention of Natal itself, a former crown colony, as part of the Commonwealth. The station's weekly broadcasts were made on shortwave, but it didn't take local jammers long to locate the signal and obliterate it. Broadcasts lasted a couple of months before the station was finally silenced. Clandestine broadcasts have been growing in numbers since the mid-60s, largely as a result of support by friendly countries towards a particular movement. This support has grown substantially since the 70s in southern Africa. The African National Congress, for example, is broadcast by various stations, including Radio Nacional d'Angola and the Voice of Revolutionary Ethiopia.
Radio Freedom, the voice of the African National Congress and its military wing, Umkhonto weSizwe.
Radio Freedom is also broadcast over facilities of Radio Tanzania and Radio Zambia. Meanwhile, the voice of Namibia, the official voice of SWAPO, or the Southwest Africa People's Organization, is a militant group operating from southern Angola. SWAPO broadcasts have been made over stations in the Congo, Angola, Zambia, Tanzania, and Ethiopia. Today, the majority are from Angola and Ethiopia.
This is the voice of Namibia, the radio service of the Southwest Africa People's Organization, SWAPO of Namibia.
And as you can see, machine guns seem to be a common interval signal. Richard Jinbe is someone who's been taking an interest in this part of African broadcasting, and he now takes up the story.
The Polisario Front, fighting for the independence of Western Sahara from Morocco, is backed by neighbouring Algeria. Polisario has declared Western Sahara the independent Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, and its claim and fight is made known through broadcasts over the official Algerian radio and Radio Nacional de Angola.
Sahrawi en lutte. lutte continue pour imposer l'indépendance nationale et la paix.
The Horn of Africa has been an area of conflict for many years. In this century, Italian occupation during World War II, the Marxist revolution in Ethiopia, the ongoing secessionist bid in Eritrea, and the war in the Ogaden waged between Ethiopia, Somalia, and the Western Somali Liberation Front. In retaliation, an anti-Somali station has been set up, Radio Kulmos, said to operate from Ethiopia. Prior to independence from Portugal, broadcasts were made to São Tomé e Príncipe, small islands in the Gulf of Guinea, from Gabon, and to Portuguese Guinea, now Guinea-Bissau, and the Cape Verde Islands, from a station calling itself Rádio Libertação, using 6240 kHz on the edge of the 49-meter band. This station was believed to be based in Guinea or Senegal. Shortly after the close of Rádio Libertação, 6240 kHz was heard to relay the government station in Bissau, Rádio Difusão Nacional. During the 1974-75 civil war in Angola, the northern part of the country was controlled by FNLA, and the south, variously, by the MPLA and UNITA, alternating with dwindling support for the FNLA. At the time of transition from a Portuguese colony to an emerging independent country, the three factions shared airtime on the official government radio station. Each, however, had its host state prior to independence, the MPLA in Zaire, FNLA in the Congo, and UNITA in Zambia. A Voz de Angola Livre, the voice of Free Angola, was the call sign used by FNLA-controlled stations in northern Angola, such as Uige and this one, Mubango Congo, formerly São Salvador.
A Voz de Angola Livre, directement de São Salvador, apresentou.
Angola's northernmost province, the enclave of Cabinda, jutting into the Congo, has a small anti-government resistance movement operating in the interior, FLEC, fighting for the independence of Cabinda. This group does not, to the best of my knowledge, have any broadcasts, despite occasional support by neighboring states in their push for power. To the east, and the 15-year-long war in Rhodesia, and its two principal movements, ZAPU, supported by Zambia, and the Patriotic Front, supported by Mozambique.
Workers and peasants, fighters in the people's forces, all patriotic Zimbabweans, from the Zambezi to the Limpopo, the Patriotic Front is now broadcasting your program through Radio Mozambique on 25, 31, 41, 39, 60, and 92 meters on shortwave.
In 1974, the Voice of Free Africa made its first appearance on medium wave using the 100 kilowatt transmitter of the then Rhodesia Broadcasting Corporation.
Escutam a voz da África Livre transmitindo para Moçambique. São 18 horas e 30 minutos. Esta é a Voz da África Livre a transmitir.
The Voice of Free Africa, or a Voz da África Livre, broadcast to Mozambique on behalf of the Mozambique National Resistance Movement, which is waging a war in central and northern Mozambique with the ruling Frelimo government, which before it came to power was supported by broadcasts from Tanzania and Zambia. In 1980, the Voice of Free Africa's Rhodesia-based broadcasts ended, and the station switched to shortwave, but more about that later on. The origin of the Voice of Free Africa as actually broadcasting from Rhodesia would probably only been guessed at, had it not been for the occasional slip-up, such as crossing over to the RBC's African service after closedown, and for the later use of registered RBC shortwave frequencies, 4828 and 5016 kHz. During the last years of the Rhodesian conflict, an unusual station appeared on shortwave, the voice of Radio Free Zimbabwe. Operating on 3315 kHz and a constantly changing frequency in the 41-meter band, both low-powered and often switching from AM to SSB. This particular station laid claim to be operating somewhere in eastern Zimbabwe, but was thought to be a black clandestine station, but on whose side, as it regularly relayed English news from the RBC's general service.
This is the voice of Radio Free Zimbabwe. We are broadcasting on 41.8 meters for listeners in and around here. It's on 2 meters every day, as from 12 o'clock in the afternoon of 1 and from 6 o'clock to 1:30 in the evening.
Anti-Marxist broadcasts in southern Africa take the form of four broadcasters, operating separately but all interlinked. These are UNITA's A Voz de Resistencia, A Voz de Verdad, and a Spanish-language broadcast without a station name, all beamed towards Angola, and, of course, our old friend A Voz de Africa Livre, the voice of Free Africa, directed to Mozambique. These transmissions may or may not have some connection with two so-called pirate stations, Radio Big Daddy and Radio Danny Boy, the two Jolly Roger stations operated in the latter half of 1979, over as many as four, possibly five, shortwave transmitters on in-band frequencies on the 60 and 90-metre tropical bands. It seems an odd coincidence that the anti-Marxist stations emerged in force after the close of Radio Big Daddy and Radio Danny Boy, and on some of their frequencies, such as the Voice of Free Africa on 4764 kHz. The Spanish-language broadcast, intended for Cubans in Angola, operates today on 6045 kHz.
Buenas noches, amigos cubanos. Bienvenidos a su programa. Recuerden vuestra cita diaria con nosotros, a la misma hora, en el mismo lugar del dial.
A Voz de Verdad is broadcast for 100 minutes each day.
No ar, mais um programa de angolanos para angolanos.
At the close of each program, there is 10 minutes of filler music, much of it South African. This program purports to be by Angolans, presumably exiles, for Angolans, and it is broadcast on 4950 kHz, a frequency shared with A Voz de Resistencia, supporting the UNITA movement in southern Angola, which is reportedly largely in that group's hands, and it's on the air for 3 hours a day, Sundays for 4 hours.
Patriotas, camaradas, saudações revolucionárias. Esta é a voz da resistência do Galo Negro, programa radiofónico da UNITA, dirigido a todo o país, do norte ao sul, do leste ao mar, rasgando o espaço com sabor a pólvora.
A Voz da África Livre claims to broadcast from Mozambique and has an address in Portugal. In 1981, it was heard on both 4764 and 4950 kHz. Unlike its days on shortwave from Rhodesia, there are no longer weekly half-hour programs in English, and even airtime has been cut by half and now totals 1 hour. The frequency of 4764 kHz often drifts and is sometimes exchanged with 3234 kHz, and even the mode of transmission is changed from AM to SSB.
or the extent of influence this or any other clandestine has or had on its intended audience is, of course, unknown. On the other hand, many of the movements involved in this type of broadcasting have come to power. The underlying message is, however, very clearly the overthrow of the establishment. In some cases, the exchange of one tyranny for another. In others, freedom for one group, jail for the other.
In that episode of Media Wars, you heard the voice of Case Middlehoff, and additional research and recordings on the African clandestine scene by Richard Jinby. The program was produced by Jonathan Marks in the studios of Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.